You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
I'm Caroline Hyde in New York, in for Emily Chang, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, you've guessed it, Elon Musk. We're covering it. It once caused Twitter private. So he's offering $43 billion in cash to do so. The board has reservations, so will shareholders ever have the option to vote? We discuss. Plus, the SEC might have a few thoughts on Musk's interest in Twitter. He vented his frustrations with the agency, including that now infamous settlement where he was forced to step down as Tesla's chair. An online sneaker marketplace, The Goat Group, is moving into team sponsorships and making its foray into Europe with a multi-year deal with French soccer club Paris Saint-Germain. Our exclusive interview with The Goat co-founder, CEO, that's later this hour. All across the ins and outs, the curiosities surrounding Elon Musk's interest in Twitter. We want to unpack that story a little bit more, starting with Musk's surprise TED Talk. It was streamed for the world.
Civilizational risk is decreased if Twitter, the more we can increase the trust of Twitter as a public platform. And so I do think this will be somewhat painful, and I'm not sure that I will actually be able to acquire it.
It was quite the kudos moment for TED, of course, amid its Canada-based event that it held today. And suddenly in flying came Elon Musk, who had some big thoughts to be had, Sarah. Talk to us about, well, just how serious we think in nature this bid is.
Well, Elon Musk, I mean, he says, of course, he has the financial wherewithal to do this if he, as Ed mentioned, sells some shares or gets some debt financing. But beyond that, I mean, he really, his heart is in changing the platform's content moderation policy. And he spoke a little bit about that at TED. He said that he wants to make sure that Twitter doesn't take down any accounts unless they absolutely have to. And that, you know, people are allowed to edit their tweets. He has a bunch of things as a power user. Remember, Elon Musk has more than 80 million followers. As a power user, he sees some things that he wants to fix and sort of make sure that Twitter is more in line with his free speech ethos. But a lot of the things he mentioned, I believe if you ask Twitter what they thought of those ideas, they would say they're doing them already, such as his thought that, you know, adhere to the rules in the country where Twitter exists. Of course, Twitter does that. So I think that, you know, it is sort of fuzzy here what exactly he plans to change concretely if he were to take over Twitter, and then how it would be led.
Yeah, and I think that's a key question. Talk to us about how we can presume, and we understand from certain other reporting, that the board isn't particularly happy about this. But we were talking, for example, that we know Jack Dorsey's still on the board. He and Elon Musk actually have a relatively favorable relationship, respect one another. But this must be incredibly high-pressure stakes for the new CEO.
It is just an incredibly highly pressured moment for Parag Agrawal, but you know, he knew what he was getting into. Twitter is a company that has had a highly volatile time with outside investors, with its board. This is a company that does not have the majority founder control, and so it is vulnerable to activist interests, to CEO change decisions, and that nature of activity. So I don't think that this is the end of the Elon Musk story. I think that We have even heard retail investors get very excited about backing him on this plan, and others who are running away from the idea that Elon Musk should shake up Twitter. It's a time of volatility. It was supposed to be a week for Twitter employees to be heads down, focusing on their work, but mm-hmm. they are very distracted, of course, by everything that's happened here.
I'm assuming there was talk that they're, of course, having a meeting to discuss just this very bid at about 5 p.m. today. So we wonder how, of course, that conversation is currently faring. Sarah Fryer, great to catch up with you, get a little bit more of the devil in the detail of all of this story as it continues to evolve. Meanwhile, let's of course now stick with it and get you some outside perspective. Two key analysts that cover the company, Mark Mahaney of Evercore, Jasmine Enberg of Insider Intelligence. Mark, Jasmine, great to have some time with you. First and foremost, Jasmine, just talk to us about, you know, what you think Elon Musk wants out of this. Is it to exercise change, as he says? I mean, what sort of change do you think could be afoot as a product perspective?
Well, first of all, it's not totally surprising that this is happening. We all expected there to be some turbulent times ahead. I mean, Musk is one of Twitter's most prolific users, and Twitter is a social platform that thrives on big news and uncertainty, and that's something that likely appeals to Musk. In terms of what he'll change, though, I think first and foremost, Musk would make Twitter a free speech haven, probably reversing many of the guardrails that Twitter has put forth recently to protect the health of the platform, its users, and to make advertisers be or feel comfortable advertising there. He'd probably also likely transform it into a subscription-only service that isn't reliant on advertising to bring in revenue. I don't think this is something that would happen overnight. I don't think Musk is 100% happy with the existing subscription model and would want to improve it before he does implement these changes, but that's likely something that would come if this deal materializes.
To that point, Mark, if you see that the product could change, would it be a positive change? How do you view any of the discussion around the evolution of the product and whether inherently it could add value? Because from what I took from the TED Talk, this ended up being thought of as sort of a not-for-profit endeavor that he's taking on.
Caroline, I think you just pointed out what's going on here. I don't necessarily hear a public market strategy from Musk. I hear a public good strategy. I've been on the sidelines on Twitter and really skeptical about the asset for a couple of years because of the slow pace of product innovation on both the user and the advertiser side. I don't hear Musk addressing those issues. I think his goals are different, and he has public goods goals. In other words, he wants to turn it into an absolutist free speech platform. Hey, he's on the side of the angels as far as I'm concerned on that, but that's not what shareholders are necessarily focused on. What are you doing to improve the tools for advertisers to run performance marketing campaigns on the side? What are you doing to make the site more intuitive for more consumers? And I'm not sure a subscription business is going to really add a lot. If you run through the numbers, if we've run surveys on this, it's only about 10% of Twitter users really want to pay for a subscription service, even putting up the kind of numbers, you know, $2 or $3 a month. I mean, maybe you get $500 million in revenue. Right now, this company is generating $3 to $4 billion in revenue. Advertising is a great model, and it's a $1 trillion TAM. So that's fine for Twitter to stick with that. They just need to improve the tools. And I don't hear that coming from Musk, but I don't think that's his strategy. I think he's coming at it with a public goods strategy, which is what you pointed out.
And to that end, Jasmine, that, of course, isn't music to investors' ears. What is music to investors' ears is growth, is getting more people on board. I mean, in a weird way, this is sort of a wonderful advertising free PR stunt that's currently going on for the use of the social media platform. But inherently, do you think it would spell its demise in terms of users, in terms of growth?
Well, the interesting thing here is that, you know, Musk's comments really come at a time that Twitter has had a rebound in ad growth. Last year, worldwide ad revenues were up 41% to nearly $4.5 billion in 2020. Ad revenues only grew by 7.4%. But I think you're absolutely right. At the very least, you know, this will drive a lot of user engagement on Twitter. Controversy tends to turn or to have people lean into the platform. At the same time, though, that makes a lot of advertisers really, really wary. Twitter has long been used as a brand advertising platform, and the company has done a lot to make it brand safe for advertisers. Now, Musk takes a very different view on speech on Twitter and is probably going to push for less, not more, content moderation, and that will make risk-averse advertisers really think twice about advertising there.
Mark, as you said, for the few years you've been on the sidelines sort of questioning the overall business model. When we saw the changing of the guard, Jack Dorsey handing over to Parag Agrawal, did you think that that was net positive? How are we feeling about this CEO, relatively new in tenure, having to navigate what is a complete storm, perfect or not?
Caroline, I viewed that as a really strong net neutral. So, you know, look, I don't know if we've heard under the new CEO a really clear strategy for the company going forward. I'll give him a few months. I think we all should. But at the same time, he's been with the company for, I forget now, 8 or 10 years, running product. By the way, that's been the problem at the company. I want to be respectful here, but you know, it's been a slow pace of innovation, and the company's come out and acknowledged that. They said that at their last investor day. So I'm not sure this was the radical change that Twitter really needed in order to, you know, speed up the product development cycle, create these performance marketing tools, and, you know, make the service just increasingly more intuitive for users. There's a point that Jasmine's made that's also really important. Some of this content moderation has been absolutely necessary. You know, a few years ago, there was just too much vitriol and too many of these F-bombs on Twitter, so they needed to take that out. I think Musk is really focusing on the political content moderation. He may be right about that. I don't think advertisers and I don't think users are really, I think most users probably aren't all that in the weeds and don't really care that much about the political moderation, the lack of it or what's going on there, because there's so many broad sets of interests. And I'm sorry, I think politics is just a small part of Twitter's appeal. Yeah. So again, I kind of look at this and what's going to change the growth profile? Yes, we had a good last year, but you know, I think this is versus the other assets in the space. Snaps had much better product innovation and growth. And this company doesn't even touch the scale of Google or Facebook.
Okay, so a one answer question for you both as we head towards the end of this conversation. When I'm looking at $54.20 in terms of taking it private, do you think it will go, will potentially see a deal for at least, is it worth $54.20, Jasmine?
You know, it's so hard to say, and I do believe that because of Musk's character, there is a very large chance that, you know, this deal does not materialize and that he changes his mind.
Mark, $54.20, is it worth that?
I think he's going to get his offer rejected. I think he's going to sell his stock. I think the stock's going to give up its 20% gains. Is it worth $54.20 under a series of, you know, product improvements? Absolutely it is. But we have to see the improvements first. No, I don't think right now, today, it's not worth $54.20. And I don't particularly appreciate his pot analogies. He doesn't have to put that as part of his bid. I just think that undermines the credibility a little bit of the offer.
Not much optimism there. Mark Mahaney, Evercore, Jasmine Enberg, Insider Intelligence. Really great to have both of you on. We thank you. Welcome back. Well, Twitter wasn't the only thing on the mind of Elon Musk today. At the TED Talk, he felt the need to get some things off his chest when it came to whether he had the money to actually take Tesla private. Now, we all remember this tweet that kicked it all off about 4 years ago when he said funding was secured, which led to, of course, the investigation by the SEC. Just take a listen to Musk's version of events.
Because the SEC knew that funding was secured, but they pursued an active public investigation nonetheless. At the time, Tesla was in a precarious financial situation, and I was told by the banks that if I did not agree to settle with the SEC, that the banks would cease providing working capital and Tesla would go bankrupt immediately. So that's like having a gun to your child's head. So I was forced to concede to the SEC unlawfully. Those bastards, and now it makes it look like I lied when I did not in fact lie. I was forced to admit that I lied to save Tesla's life, and that's the only reason.
Sorry for perhaps some of the strong language in that. Musk was then asked in a very next question if he's glad that he didn't actually take Tesla private, and he admitted actually that he was. Joining me now, Tom Gorman. I think not Tom Gorman. Harvey Pitt. Apologies, Chairman Pitt. I don't know what's going on with, we thought we had someone prior to you, but I'm very pleased to say that it is indeed you and your expertise when it comes to the SEC. And Chairman, I'm interested, of course, as a man who, you know, has helped lead the SEC, understand the way in which this organization works, and has had to suffer some of the abuse, it would seem, perhaps being leveled at you from the likes of Elon Musk. How do you think about that settlement that was made 4 years ago and the controversy that it stirred and the ongoing anger it still seems to be within, of course, Elon Musk himself?
I think it's basically Musk's fiction. If he didn't want to litigate with the SEC or couldn't afford it, all he had to do was say, I'm not going to litigate. I'll default and let the SEC get a judgment and let's see what a court will order. But he spent probably hundreds of thousands of dollars on legal fees to execute a settlement that went back and forth. Mm. Having done that, he should live up by it to his agreement. He agreed to do it. If he didn't want to do it, nobody held a gun to his head.
The proverbial one, he was sort of saying it was in a difficult situation, financially precarious for Tesla at the time. But now, as we look forward, you, of course, were the 26th chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Committee back in 2001 to 2003. It's a different beast now, but it is a beast that's currently having to analyze what perhaps a taking private of Twitter looks like by one Elon Musk. The way in which he's conducted it, the amount that he's stating again with the all-important 420 number in it, is it something the SEC is going to be taking seriously?
I think it's very hard to take anything Mr. Musk does seriously. He always has ulterior motives, and there are serious questions about what he's really about. He has said that if his offer isn't accepted, he will have to reconsider his position. Mm. So he's already created an overhang on the market. And I think it's a safe bet that Twitter, although it has said it will review the offer, will ultimately reject it. That's not to say it should reject it, but it is to say that they will. They will have all sorts of reasons that they concoct to refuse to accept Musk's offer, and then the market price of the stock will plummet. So he's playing a game with Twitter and with the investors in Twitter and with the market for Twitter securities.
And it's a game or indeed a maneuver or indeed a way in which he conducts himself through the medium of social media, which is fascinating in this current day and age. And we shouldn't be shocked by it, given that we've had, well, the head of the United States, a president himself who used to give an awful lot of news via the social media platform. But how do you think an SEC can look at what is, you know, an announcement of taking a certain amount of shares in a company, an announcement of then wanting to do a bid? How do you think SEC regulation can adapt to this new age of this news environment?
I think it's very difficult because the SEC's rules did not really contemplate social media. Mm. And while there have been very good attempts by the SEC to try to modernize their positions, it's still very difficult for them. The fact that somebody can simply tweet out to 85 million people market influencing information is not something the SEC has yet come up with a solution for. And I think that is going to have to be something it takes a very close look at.
If you were chairman, one word of advice right here, right now for the SEC?
If I were chair, what would I do?
Yeah.
Well, I first of all would say former SEC chairs should be seen but not heard.
So nicely said.
That's one aspect. But I would say this. I would be investigating the origins of this offer. I would want to investigate why Musk filed the wrong form when he passed the 5% threshold. And I would be looking into a variety of Musk potential infractions.
Yeah.
I would want to consider whether any of those infractions should or could impede the progress of his offer and whether investors have been harmed. I believe he has done a lot of serious damage to the way the markets are supposed to function.
Chairman Harvey Pitt, we thank you so much for your expertise, your insights there. We'll wonder if the SEC was listening. From New York, this is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So aside from the world of Elon Musk, here's some other stories that we are following. Well, cuts are coming at Peloton. The fitness company is slashing prices for its major hardware products. The high-end bike Plus is being cut to $500, while the treadmill is being reduced by $150. The bike is being reduced by $500, in fact. Meanwhile, Peloton is rising, of course, the price of its monthly subscriptions. It's all part of a comeback plan aimed at generating more recurring revenue. Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I am Caroline Hyde in New York. Let's get back to, of course, the top story, Elon Musk's $43 billion bid. Let's discuss a little bit like what on the platform of Twitter could be changed and what are some of the concerns about Elon Musk perhaps taking over that company. During his TED talk today, he mentioned the idea of free speech a lot, essentially that him buying Twitter would be the ultimate goal. Take a listen.
I think it's very important for there to be an inclusive arena for free speech, where all, Twitter has become kind of the de facto town square. It's really important that people have both the reality and the perception that they are able to speak freely within the bounds of the law.
A de facto town square. Well, we're going to dig into that thought now. I'm joined by Jennifer Greigel, Associate Professor of Communications at Syracuse and an expert social media, including platform governance, content moderation, memes, memes certainly a strong point of Elon Musk. Jennifer, your perspective on what Elon really wants to achieve by doing this.
I mean, I know he put a big performance on at TED today, but I decided to make a sandwich instead because it was like time better spent. I was hungry. But, you know, I think honestly, even as seeing in that clip, the last person we want owning a town square is Elon Musk. And certainly we don't want more big platforms being owned. You know, we already see that with Zuckerberg. We see that with others. So, like, this isn't something that we want to see happen at this point.
There was, of course, while you were making a sandwich and maybe potentially still listening in, there was discussion of, well, more than 2,000 people, up to 2,000 people potentially owning Twitter with him, and perhaps it being some sort of non-for-profit. Would that be a direction of travel? Does it need to be a publicly held business?
It really should be owned by more of those who need a real stake in the public square and speech. But like retail investors, you know, he is not going to take this over with retail investors. He needs institutional investors. He needs the big corporates who have these big blocks. He needed people like the Saudi prince, who was an early investor. Like, he just doesn't have the friends to help him take it over at this point. And I just don't see the retail investors, even though I'm concerned about, like, public speech, and that is kind of, like, represented with those who do retail investing, right? But, like, it's not going to happen with Elon that way. So maybe he has another plan, but there's a lot of people who have a stake in this, and they want the power associated with it. As you mentioned, Elliott Management Company, these people aren't necessarily just interested in making money. They care about the social aspect of big platforms like Twitter too.
As one hopes, the people who work at Twitter are as well, and it must be an incredibly torrid time if you're currently the CEO of Twitter. Parag Agrawal, we understand, is ending the meeting with staff over evaluating the offer. And Jennifer, words of advice to change what currently is occurring and the frustration that some people feel in terms of denial of free speech or too much free speech?
You know, again, we have to remember that this CEO is new. It was put in after Elliott and others had exerted some influence at the company. He's essentially kind of a company guy at this point. He's steering the boat for the current investors there. But free speech has not ever been the case with a company like Twitter. It's a public company. This is about the speech of those who own and run it. And that's what Elon Musk is interested in. He's interested in expanding his agenda, expanding his speech and his power and what he wants to use it for.
Jennifer, is it a regulatory intake that we now need? Is there involvement that is necessary?
You know, I saw on the list there the things that were being discussed with the employees, and nowhere did I see how to regulate government, right? Like, including our own here in the United States on these platforms. We still don't talk enough about how much the federal government pushes out federal propaganda, right, on these platforms. And that is probably something that he doesn't want to draw attention to. So I think it's less about, like, the edit button. Like I said last week, this isn't about the typos. This is about being able to maybe exert some control over our own government to push back. Maybe when he doesn't like what the SEC is doing, you know, what if he ends up putting a bunch of the federal accounts in a quarantine and not boosting them in the algorithm anymore? I don't think the government would like that. So there's a lot of power here. It's not just about Trump coming on the platform or not. Like, just because he's on doesn't mean he has any reach like he used to, right? So they could limit, you know, how much, you know, visibility he gets in the algorithm too. And this idea of transparency too, like, if it's totally transparent, it'll be gamed by bad actors, by our own government. It'll be gamed by the power players. So, you know, maybe independent audits are needed to help make sure this isn't abused. But, you know, these ideas that he's floating are just kind of pull them out of his back pocket. They don't really make a ton of sense.
Always thought-provoking. Jennifer Greigel, thank you. Associate Professor of Communications at Syracuse.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
We continue to discuss Elon Musk's, bid for Twitter, and he currently is saying that the Twitter board has a liability if acting against shareholder interest. The Twitter board's duty is breached if they act against shareholder interest. He's commenting on the possibility, basically, of the defensive method that the Twitter board could use, known as a poison pill, to be able to sort of expunge any sort of overall control by someone such as Elon Musk. So currently he's using the platform that he so loves and wants to take private, saying that if current Twitter board takes actions contrary to shareholder interest, they would be breaching their fiduciary duty. The liability they would thereby assume would be titanic in scale. So, of course, the board, of course, have previously been evaluating the offer. We understand the Twitter CEO has been ending an own meeting with its staff, saying that they are evaluating the offer coming from Elon Musk. So we're actually going to weave all of this into our crypto report now, because we keep on discussing how and when the platform could evolve, if Elon Musk in any way's intervention could add some more cryptocurrency impact within Twitter's space, and indeed, of course, take it open source in terms of its algorithm. And what would that look like? Let's bring in our next guest for, a really focused take. Nader Al-Nalji is with us. He is, of course, the creator of DSO. That's the DSO Foundation. It's a layer one blockchain built on, for the purpose of scaling decentralized social applications. Nader, your take on an open sourcing of the Twitter algorithm, would that in any way make it more decentralized in nature?
That's a great question, Caroline. Actually, just take it back a bit. It's funny because I actually think that Twitter right now is distracting people from a lot of the real innovation that's happening in social media. I'd like to say, imagine if the iPhone came out and yet all anyone wanted to talk about was their BlackBerry. Most people don't even remember what a BlackBerry is anymore because it's no longer relevant. But really, right now, Twitter and centralized social media platforms are BlackBerry, and DSO is the iPhone. And why is that? Well, really, it's because it's better in every way than centralized social media platforms like Twitter. And to go now to your question about open sourcing, it's exactly what you said. When you make a post on Twitter, a corporation owns it, they control who gets to see it, and they make all the money off of it. And all of that's completely opaque. In contrast, when you make a post on DSO, it's stored on the DSO blockchain, and you own it the same way you would own your Bitcoin. It goes onto a public ledger and shows up in hundreds of apps that all have their own approach to moderation, most of which are completely open source, and you can actually look into how they work. Right now we're talking about which billionaire should control the internet. Do we want Elon Musk or the Saudi prince, to control Twitter? And the answer is, we want nobody to control it. DSO really is to social what Bitcoin is to money. You can own your content for the first time, and it's extremely exciting.
What was interesting, of course, on the currently rather centralized website that is Twitter, you had the likes of Sam Bankman-Fried, of course, SBF, CEO of FTX, a crypto exchange, talking about what he thought a decentralized Twitter could look like. Talk to us about, is there any way that you can reverse engineer this? Because SBF was sort of talking about tweets going on chain, they're encrypted, the sender chooses who has access to them. So it sort of unifies direct messages and tweets, or you can monetize it by having the protocol charging something per message, or you could be about the user interface that monetizes it as well. Is there any way you could reverse engineer Twitter in and of itself?
Of course, and actually everything that Sam Bankman-Fried described in his tweet already exists on DSO. And so really, like I said, it's like all anyone's talking about is BlackBerry, and yet the iPhone's right here. So including, by the way, end-to-end encrypted group messaging exactly as he described it for the exact purpose. And if you want to actually see it for yourself, there are many apps listed on DSO.org, but my favorite is diamondapp.com. And you can use exactly what Sam Bankman-Fried describes as the epitome of decentralized social media if you go to diamondapp.com. And again, it's all happening right before our eyes. It's kind of a gradually then suddenly kind of phenomenon. But DSO already has over 1.5 million accounts, hundreds of applications being built on it. People like Chamath of Social Capital, Brian Armstrong, Winklevosses, actually even Sam Bankman-Fried a long time ago made an account on a DSO app. He probably doesn't even remember it right now, but I'm sure he's looking at it again. So a lot of very impactful people are looking at this, and I think it's just a matter of time before the heat really gets on it.
Yeah, so now that, like, let's talk about this, therefore, as a bit of a, if Twitter did embrace in some way Web3 a little bit more than Web2, and aided sort of the gateway drug to then jumping on to one of the apps built on DSO. What would that look like? How can you help me, others who are still just very used to Web2, getting to grips with what really a decentralized social platform could look like? Because a lot of it looks kind of scary. Looks like, you know, or you're charging for certain bits, the protocol's going to do this. It can sound terribly intimidating. Demystify, unintimidate it for us.
Absolutely. So if you go to an app like diamondapp.com, you'll see that it's similar to Twitter. You can still follow people. You can make posts. But the difference is that when you follow someone, that's stored on a public blockchain. And when you make a post, it shows up in all the apps built on the DSO blockchain, of which there are hundreds, not just that one app. So all these different moderation policies that are totally open impact your posts, and you get much more reach. And then because you're on a blockchain, you also have access to microtransactions, so you can tip via a diamond. So right next to the like button is a diamond button where you can give anywhere between a penny and hundreds of dollars. Creators have earned over $40 million on DSO apps across the ecosystem. Your post can become an NFT automatically because it's stored on the blockchain. And then, you know, you're asking about what is the future of Twitter? Well, interestingly, no matter how you slice Elon Musk taking control of Twitter or not taking control of Twitter, you know, DSO is really inevitable because either DSO apps outcompete Twitter because open platforms outcompete closed platforms, or Twitter ends up in the long run embracing DSO, storing its content on there so it can access things like the NFTs, microtransactions, and coins associated with it. So either way, you know, DSO, I think, is the future. And that's why I think it's so exciting.
And Nada, just quickly, how about content moderation therein?
Absolutely. So this is the unintuitive thing that a lot of people take for granted, is when you have an open platform like DSO, there's actually a lot more transparency into what is going viral and why, the reputation of the people who are posting, is it a bot or not. You can have the best machine learning researchers in the entire world analyzing the fire hose of content, identifying bot farms, bot armies. And, you know, even the in the long term, moderation can be something that a lot of people take part in by analyzing the chain, producing lists of things that they believe are harmful that other private apps get to consume. And what's amazing is all of this can be done by smaller players with higher fidelity and higher accuracy than the platform monopolies today, because everyone in the economy has an incentive to build a piece that they're really good at. So we're really good at building the blockchain. You know, we might not be the best at content moderation, but the best people in the world can do their part, and then we can, you know, utilize that service from them. So it just creates so much more efficiency around everything that's currently being done by kind of a stagnant platform monopoly today.
Nada, it's always great to catch up with you. Thank you for painting that picture for us. Nada El-Naji.
Thank you so much, Caroline.
Creator of DSO and the head of the DSO Foundation. Let's talk soccer now. French football club Paris Saint-Germain getting into e-commerce through a deal with Goat Group. This is the online sneaker marketplace moves into team sponsorship and looks to expand perhaps outside the United States. Let's bring in Goat's co-founder, CEO Eddie Liu, for more on this fascinating deal. Talk to us about why PSG.
Hey, Caroline. Great to be here. So excited. Goat is continuing its international expansion through a strategic partnership with one of the most iconic football clubs in all the lands, Paris Saint-Germain. We are a principal partner, so that means the Goat brand is going to be on the sleeve of the jerseys all across the arena. And of course, in the Goat app, there's going to be a dedicated PSG experience with exclusive drops, content, media, and more.
Talk to us about those exclusive products, because it's so interesting. I go on to the Goat website, I see like Lionel Messi now with Goat on his sleeve, but you're getting into the world of new products, apparel and more, not so much, you know, you're in a sneaker exchange and marketplace, but what other offerings are you looking at?
Well, with PSG, I mean, the great thing about that is that they're not just a football club. They're building a brand, a lifestyle and fashion brand, and that's similar to what Goat is doing. We're not just a sneaker marketplace anymore. We've built our own fashion and lifestyle brand full of accessories, fashion, sneakers, and more. And, you know, when looking at the PSG partnership, it was just so natural because our visions were very much aligned. And when we were thinking about expanding and increasing brand awareness through Europe and beyond, they were just such a natural partner for us.
What about Lionel Messi? What about some of the players? How do you team up with some of these sports stars and the brand of them as well?
Well, it's great that they have some of the GOATs of football. I mean, we're talking about Messi, Mbappe, Neymar, etc. And aligning the GOATs of football with GOAT, the brand, there's going to be so many fun activations and experiences with both the club and the players. So stay tuned for that, Caroline.
And what about, you know, overall Europe as a marketplace to expand in? How big is the sneaker resale market there?
Well, Goat started in 2015, and now we've become the leading and most trusted sneaker and fashion marketplace in the United States. But we've seen that fashion, just like football, it's not just a domestic market, it's global. And we're seeing so much growth in Europe and beyond. So for us, we know that we're great in the US. We want to continue to provide that experience for the rest of the world. And so this partnership is key in helping us expand to Europe.
Eddie, I love that you just called it football. Meanwhile, talk to us about sort of the world of, dare I even say it, I feel like sports people all over the US are really embracing NFTs and the like. Is that going to be something that you sort of look at in your space?
NFTs, of course, are something that we're looking at. For us, we know that there's still so much value in bringing products to consumers in the real world. And that's what we're focused on now. But we're always keeping an eye on it because the digital experience will be something in the future.
Eddie, I wish we had more time. It's fantastic to catch up with you. Congratulations. Interesting deal. Tell us how that expansion into Europe goes. Eddie Liu, Goat Group, co-founder, CEO. With some time with him and an exclusive conversation. Meanwhile, that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. Don't forget to check out our new podcast. You can find it on the terminal as well as online on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you choose to get your fix.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.